Hey, it's Larry Goins. Welcome to the biweekly Q&A calls for Inner Circle students. How is everyone doing?
Well,
I'm doing great.
Outstanding.
Excellent. Got a lot of people on today, so
sure
I'm not going to take a whole lot of time. We do have new students as well as existing students on here, so if it's your first time, welcome aboard. Congratulations. We're really looking forward to it. These are biweekly Q&A calls with me, and I'll be on here as long as it takes to answer any and all questions that you guys have. And it's just an open forum. You can ask your question, and I'll answer it and elaborate on it until I give you a satisfactory answer that answers your question entirely. So let's try to stump Larry. Who has a question?
Well, this is Ron out in Sutter.
How you doing, Ron?
Fine, Larry. Kimberly was telling me that you were interested in investing in mobile homes that were out there. And I know there's a lot of mobile home manufacturers, and they'll have their quota of mobile homes per year, and then they'll upgrade to a newer mobile home. Well, the ones that are left over that haven't been upgraded or last year's model, you know, like an automobile,
right,
they usually put them on the, they usually sell them at a discounted price.
Right.
And I was wondering to contact these mobile home manufacturers and salespeople to try to pick up one at a real reduced price and either locate them in a mobile home park where they're welcome to bring in and set up, or else have it on a piece of land that has quite a bit of acreage.
So are you talking about buying from a dealer a new home but last year's model?
Depends on if they're discounted enough.
Uh-huh.
And if you can buy it at a low enough, let's say a sales price or whatever, we want to make room for newer models coming in. And or it might be models that were damaged due to hauling or storms or something like that.
Right.
And you can bring them in and repair them.
Yeah. I'm not so sure about last year's model. Usually the mobile home dealers want way too much for a brand new home. Plus you have to pay to have it moved and set up somewhere. What I have found is the best thing to do is to buy either existing homes with the land that have either been foreclosed on and the bank owns them, or individuals who own them and just want to sell them and they don't really owe anything or much at all if they owe anything on them.
Okay.
So, but also you can sometimes buy, I shouldn't say sometimes, but you can also buy mobile homes without the land that are sometimes in parks where you could either possibly buy them from the mobile home finance company that repoed them, and you could talk to the park owner about leaving them in the park, or you could find a lot to put them on, but that's going to require you to have to tear it down, move it, and set it up and find some land with water and sewer to do that on. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. About 20 years ago, this lady died, and her mobile home was empty, and it was all set up to go, and I contacted her relatives, and I said, I'd like to buy the mobile home, and I believe I bought it for $15,000, and of course, it had quite a bit of damage, but it cost me about $5,000 to have it all prepared, but I did sell it, resold it for $28,000 to a person wanted to live there, buyer.
Well, that's
so
good. That is good. But yeah, I like the existing mobile homes with the land, and unless you just really want to buy them in a park,
uh-huh.
and, or want to have to go through the moving process, that's like developing. That's worse than being a contractor, you know, having to deal with rehab. Because you got to have a moving company, then you got to have it set up, you got to get a foundation underpin, you got to have it inspected, you know, because they have to be tied down for a hurricane and that sort of thing. So it's really kind of a pain.
Yeah, that I'd like to bypass all of that.
You know, I hear you. Ron,
like,
I believe,
like,
I agree with you. How's Kimberly doing?
She's here going through her bills and trying to get everything caught up. But I hear you there. I mean, we have no problems rehabbing houses that we picked up and need a new remodel of the kitchen, let's say, or a new sink. And it can be a pain. And I would just sometimes just say, hey, let's just discount it and sell it to somebody else to do the rehab.
Yeah, just move on. Just move on. That's
but
the
I
key right there.
But like I say, I find a mobile home that can be rehabbed, not expensively, but something that's going to cost maybe a few hundred, and you can get it rehabbed and get in and get out.
Exactly. Easy in, easy out.
Now, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, me and you both.
That's true. Right now we've got five homes that we're trying to get sold before the first of the year, get the escrow closed on them. And so I want to get out of that entirely.
I hear you.
Wholesaling them, fine, but not fix her up and try to find a client and go through
there
all of them.
There you go. Well, hey, if you can get them sold before the end of the year, that's great, but close in January so you can defer those taxes into the following year.
Oh, we can defer our taxes into the following year.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, we've been discussing it with a friend of ours. He's a loan officer, and he's told us that to get everything done as quickly as can before the first, and then last year, and then, of course, you have a lot of tax advantages. Anything you want to say to Gary, Larry? Here, Kim wants to talk to you.
Okay.
Hi, Larry.
Hey, Kimberly, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I am doing great. We're doing the biweekly Q&A call. Got a bunch of people on. Ron asked the question. And
good.
I think you said you must have a follow-up question or something.
I will later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Give someone else a turn to talk.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's good. Well, it's really good to talk to you. I asked him how you were doing.
Yeah, I'm right here. We don't have a speaker on this phone, so we're trading back and forth.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you guys can both listen in then.
Yes.
That's good. Well, anybody else have a question you want to get answered?
Yes, I do, Larry. This is T. Sharp from Columbia, South Carolina.
How are you?
Good, good. I have a seller financing question. I'm working on a property where I'm trying to get the property subject to the existing financing.
Uh-huh.
And if that works out, I'd like to seller finance it to a buyer. How would that work, though, with the existing financing? I'd get a wraparound mortgage, or, you know, how would that work?
Yes, if you are taking over the property subject to, and then you are going to seller finance it,
right,
you would do a wrap loan or sell it on a land contract, either one.
Like a land contract.
Or a wraparound mortgage, either one.
Now, how does that work? Is there, like, so there
it works really
mortgage
good.
Recorded?
I'm sorry, I just said it works really good.
I was just wondering, is there a second mortgage recorded or there's only one mortgage? I'm really confused about the specifics of how that would work.
Well, if you're buying it subject to, the
right.
person doing your closing is going to deed the property to you. Okay?
Right.
Then you're going to go, you're going to contact the lender. Have you done a subject to before?
Many years ago. Many
okay.
years ago.
Well, then you probably, you know then that you have to get, you know, you send a letter to the lender.
Right.
You are now managing the property.
Right.
And to send all correspondence to you.
Right.
You also have the seller do the same thing, put a letter in there. And
right.
You're going to get new insurance.
Right.
And, you know, and then that way they could cancel their insurance, but you got your insurance on the property, and they're also, I can't remember if the term is co-insured or what,
right,
on the subject to, because I try not to do subject to's, but
right.
But then now let's say you got the property in your name, you're making payments on the underlying loan,
right,
you go to sell it, and when you sell it, you either sell it and take back a wraparound mortgage,
right,
and the attorney will do that. It's called an all-inclusive trust deed.
Right, right.
Or you could just sell it on a land contract.
Okay.
Either way.
Now, do we have to follow Dodd-Frank when we do something like this?
Absolutely you do.
Okay.
Absolutely. So you need to either have an RMLO or
okay.
You need to have an RMLO and a servicer probably.
Right. And those gentlemen that came from Colombia, was it a national asset?
Mm-hmm.
They could take care of something like this?
They could do that. There's a lot of people out there that could do that.
Okay. So they wouldn't have a problem originating and complying with Dodd-Frank, even though there's an underlying law.
You're in South Carolina, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, where are you from?
Colombia.
Oh, man, they're right up the street from you.
I know. I went by the other day.
Oh, did you stop in and see them?
I did.
Oh, good.
The main guys were in Dallas, but I talked to some of their assistants, and I talked to Matt.
Okay.
Chris today.
Yeah, Matt and Chris were in Dallas at the Note Expo.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
We actually had some people from our office there, too.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, I was wondering if they could originate something like that, even though it's an underlying note. Would that be a problem for, I don't know.
Sure,
I don't know if
there'd
be a problem for them doing that.
Sure they can.
No. Okay.
It's just the about the origination, it's just a matter of them qualifying the buyer.
That's right. And it has to be structured so that the underlying mortgage should be paid off before the other mortgage is paid off. I mean, otherwise it wouldn't get through
the time. Absolutely, you need to do that. You need to make
That's
sure
right.
that the loan that you give your buyer is going to last longer than the loan
That's right.
debt from your seller.
Otherwise,
the contract
for deed, they won't yeah.
making payments.
Right, right. Okay. So it is doable, then we can do something like this.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
People do it all the time.
Okay.
It is a little more complicated of a deal, but absolutely you could do it.
Okay. That's great. I'll talk to Matt again about this because I think we had miscommunication there, so I just wanted to talk to you about that. So.
Absolutely. That's great, man.
Okay. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry, this is Verlalia Lewis in Texas.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. My question pertains to purchasing multiple properties. I need to know if you have a specific strategy for offering to purchase multiple properties. Because I've had about two different people come, and they each had three properties to sell.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking my exit strategy is the seller financing. But each of the properties range in price from $30,000 to $35,000.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking it's for land value because the homes themselves are not in great shape.
Uh-huh.
Even though a few of them have renters in them.
So,
so I wanted
to
know your best
sell it
approach.
For seller financing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, here is one thing that I have about buying multiple properties from one seller. Now, I know you're not talking about buying in bulk. You're just talking about there's a seller, whether it's a bank or anybody else, that has two or three or four properties that they're wanting to sell at the same time, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Here's the thing I've found, okay, and this is a very, very good tip not many people know, is when you're making an offer on multiple properties, don't say, you know, I'll give you 28 for this one, I'll give you 32 for this one, I'll give you 24 for this one. You just give them one lump sum price, especially if it's a bank, because the bank may have specific amounts that they can accept for specific properties. And if you say 24 on this one, 26 on this one, 32 on the other one, then they may not be able to make those numbers work. However, they may be able to allocate specific amounts to make the numbers work. So overall, they're getting enough money, but, you know, on the property they could take less on, they allocate less to, and the property they need to get more out of, they allocate more up to, and they're able to make it work. Does that make sense?
Yes. And that was my thinking. I wasn't going to offer per property. I was going to lump them all together and give them one offer for all of the properties.
There you go. That's good.
And that tip about waiting until next year to close, thank you for that, Ron. Because I was thinking I wanted to make a purchase before the end of the year. So
make a purchase, you know, and one of the good things to do is to make the purchase before the end of the year, but don't sell it until the beginning of the year.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. And on the previous caller, you made a statement that I didn't really hear all of it. You said something in reference to make the loan to the buyer longer than, and I didn't hear the rest of that.
Oh, well, he was talking about buying a property subject to, in other words, he's taking over somebody else's loan.
Correct.
And I said to make sure that the loan you give to your buyer lasts longer than the one you got from your seller.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
I see.
Good. Because you don't want to get, you know, you don't want to get 15 years down the road and you got another 2 years to pay on after your buyer's already paid you off.
Already paid. Correct. I see.
There
that.
You go. Good. Cool. Well, I'm glad that helped. I'm glad you're doing well.
I'm inching along here. I'm gonna pull the trigger real
soon. Good. That's good. Anybody else have a question?
John Jackson, Baltimore.
How you doing?
Outstanding.
Excellent.
My question is about counter offers. Put a offer out on the property. The seller countered. Talked to my coach. My coach said my offer was good and I should hold, which I'm inclined to agree with.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I was thinking in terms of, say, for a strategy for next week, and let me build a picture because I have not gone in and looked at property physically.
Right.
And the pictures are old. I was thinking about setting up a showing of the house and taking my contractor people in and take a look at it and then doing the counter offer. Do you think that's a good idea or not?
So you're setting up a showing.
Yeah, setting up a viewing for myself. Yeah, just a viewing for myself and my contractor. Cause I haven't seen it physically inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely you could do that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. And that's good. You need to do it eventually anyway, especially if you're getting close on your figures.
Okay. And then make the counter offer after then and see what happens.
You could do that, absolutely. That way you would have a little bit better handle on it up front. We make so many offers that we don't go look at them until after we've agreed upon a price.
Yes, and you have so much experience.
We negotiate.
And you have so much experience, and I don't.
Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, absolutely you could do that, especially even on your first couple of them, so that way you can get a few under your belt and feel better about, you know, knowing what you're doing and feel more comfortable with it. That's the whole key right there. You want to get to where you're comfortable.
Okay. Now, Larry, the bid I put in was at the 20% of asking and everything. And my initial analysis said I could go 30% in the market area that I'm in.
Uh-huh.
Is 30% too high of a percentage or not?
Say that again.
Is 30% too high to offer? The retail, the asking price is about $50,000.
Okay.
And
It's
$40,000. And I'm thinking of going. Okay. That's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah, that's what 30% is. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was thinking as well to do that.
There
okay, I think I am doing the analysis fairly good at this point.
Awesome.
So that's what I will
proceed. Sounds
with.
Like
it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh man, no problem. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Anybody else have a question?
Yes, Larry. This is Amin in Boston.
How are you, sir? I got your email and I looked at your deals.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I did. The second house that you sent me, you sent me two deals to analyze and look at for the call tonight.
Yeah.
And the second one, stay away from it, okay?
Oh, stay away? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the crime, you've got red right next to that house, and it's not like traffic violation or, you know, anything like that. It is, you know, assault with a deadly weapon, armed robbery, and, you know, I mean, there was one where a woman was walking down the street and got robbed at gunpoint. I mean, you don't want to buy a house in that area, okay?
Okay.
And the first property
one?
The first property looked to be boarded up. Is that true?
The windows they were broken, so they put something on.
So it didn't appear to be a rough area. However, if it's the windows are broken, I would like to know why and what's going on. But that price was very expensive for that house too. I believe that was $57,900 or something like that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's.
Yeah.
They said
what
they had an appraiser come by, and that was the appraised.
What were you planning on offering?
About 35.
About 35, and in my opinion, that's a little high.
Okay, what would you suggest?
Well, I would have to do a little bit more analysis on it. But in my opinion, it's going to need to be in probably the low to mid-20s.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Do you know how long it's been on the market?
50 days, something like that. 50
okay,
or
so almost
days.
2 months. About time for another price drop, huh?
The listing agent told me that the owner had it appraised at that price, so that's the price they put as the asking price.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, say that again?
The owner of the property had the place appraised.
Uh-huh.
And the appraiser came in at the price. And
at that
that's
price.
What, yeah.
And that's the second property, right?
The first one.
Oh, the first one, okay.
Yeah.
So it's owned by an individual.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, okay. They're not living in it, are they?
No, it's vacant.
Yeah, that's what I thought with the boarded up windows. Okay.
Yeah, it is vacant.
Yeah, I would just be careful with that one. You know, just keep your offer low, see what they say, and let me know if you get a counter.
Okay, we'll do then.
Okay, cool. Good. I hope that helped.
Okay, yeah.
Excellent. Anybody else have a question?
Yes, Larry. This is Ray Baker in Houston, Texas.
How you doing, buddy?
Oh, pretty good. I've been trying to do the coming up with the offers for the homes. And when you're doing the 30%, are you doing that off the ARV value, or are you doing that off what the listing price is.
When you say when I'm doing the 30%, what does that mean? When I'm making an offer based on
yes.
a percentage of list?
Yes.
It
so
is
when
a
you're
list,
doing the 30%. Say that again?
It is based on list price, not based on the ARV.
Okay.
So if I'm offering 30% a list, you know, and the house is listed for $30,000, you know, I'm going to offer $9,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, cool.
Okay,
now,
thank you.
Every deal is different now. Remember, sometimes you can pay more. As long as you can sell that note. You know, if you're going to sell or finance it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then on the note, are you're wanting 20% to 25% equity?
It kind of depends on the deal. But yeah, you need to get a decent down payment and then just realize that your note buyer is going to need about at least 20 to 25, sometimes 30% equity. So if the house, let's just say that you sold it for 100 and you got 5 down, which I know that's a little high, but I'm just keeping the math simple. But if they need 25 to 30% equity, they don't want to. Even though you have a $95,000 note, they don't want to be in that note any more than, you know, $75,000, and probably even less than that on a higher price note like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope that helps. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, I got a question.
Sure.
At what point does a note get where it's harder to sell? Once we've created that note, we're selling. At what point is it harder to find buyers for that note? At $100,000 or at what amount?
Well, I don't know that there's such a thing as it being harder to sell, other than the fact that there's a lot more people have 20, 30, 40, 50,000. Than have 70, 80, 90, 100,000. So the note is still just as valuable. It's just there's more people with smaller amounts of money than larger amounts of money, which means that does make your note easier to sell.
Okay.
Is that kind of what you meant?
That's what I meant.
Good, good. And that's why I like the smaller deals. There's a lot more people with smaller amounts. And if you're doing something like that in your retirement account, you could just sell a partial just enough to get your money back. So you could keep doing it, and you never run out of money.
Thank you.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
There you go. Good. Anybody else have a question?
I do, Larry. This is Kim in California.
Hey, Kim.
Hi there. Have you ever worked with the neighborhood stabilization programs? Any of the county grants or programs that offer for investors to come in and fix up properties?
You know, no, I haven't. I haven't done that. And there's, you know, there's also the programs that, what is it called? I forget what it's called, but where the state has money to help make the payments on the delinquent loans.
Oh, okay.
I forget what that's called, but I don't really buy existing notes, so I'm not really dealing with a lot of delinquent stuff or whatever. And if people that I'm working with, if they default, you know, I either try to modify it or I try to, you know, I get them out and then I just resell it again and get another down payment.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Some things have developed since Ron and I went to South Carolina, and they've asked me to sit on a nonprofit board not only as a realtor, but also as a veteran, because it's for veterans.
Awesome.
And they're looking at us purchasing these HUD homes for like $1, or they're asking me to research, which I have been researching, the neighborhood stabilization programs where we can get the funding to do exactly what your business model is to
right.
where we come in, purchase the properties. If they need to be fixed up, we fix them up, and then you put new homeowners in there. They're trying
to stabilize.
And
this is a nonprofit that's doing that?
But it would be the nonprofit doing it.
Oh, great.
And so we're just kicking things off, and, I mean, the timing is incredible from your course to what has happened, and so I've been working very closely with the nonprofit, and we would be doing the exact same exercise, just not using any of our funding, but to get funding from state or national grants, and one of them is the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, and
right.
I didn't know, I'm reading up on it, but I just wondered if you had any actual hands-on experience with doing that.
Well, I know every state has its own website.
Right, okay.
So whatever state you're doing that in, every state has its own website, and you can find it just by Googling it, Neighborhood Stabilization Program Funds California,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
you'll find the website for it. And then you can kind of research it from there. But they have specific amounts of money to use for that. And,
right.
You know, once that money's allocated or gone, then it's not available until the following year.
Okay, correct.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. That's probably the way it works. And okay. All right, I appreciate that because that's kind of what we were going to do to help clean up some communities, but it would just be part of our nonprofit board effort.
That's
so I'm very
great.
Anxious for when you get yours ready.
I know.
I
wish I had time to work on it. You know how that is.
Oh, I do, because I would love to. I don't know if you're going to have us as franchisees of your nonprofit or just branches or what, but I would love to do that.
I'm still trying to figure out the whole model there, but
okay.
as soon as I figure it out, I will definitely let you know.
Okay.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Hmm? Anybody else have a question? You guys have had some really good stuff tonight.
I'm just a little curious about the program that Kim was just talking about. As an investor, would you make any profit at all since you're working for a nonprofit, or are you just volunteering services and able to write it off on your taxes?
Kim, would you mind answering that?
We have not gotten that far. There are certain grant programs I have researched, and there's like the Veterans Assistance Housing Program. It's the VAHP. I've been researching that, and there's also state and federal grants for veterans. But and they can allocate monies for a board or an entity to actually purchase the homes, and then if they need to be fixed up, you fix them up, and then they will be resold or rented to veterans. There's very specific requirements whether it can be a rented end use or a purchase end use. So on rented, for instance, the information that I received just a few days ago is that they have rent restrictions. And in California right now, it's $400 for a veteran to rent one of these homes. And so, and that $400 is micromanaged. And the board is responsible for reporting to the grant, the funding entity, as to where exactly all the $400 went, and it's to be used for management fees, staffing fees, operational fees, et cetera, and it's nothing, and then a portion of it may go back to the use of the board. If you're looking at neighborhood stabilization, the nonprofit can start building, let's say, a piggy bank, and then they can be paid board members, so to speak. So if you're a board member, then each of the board members can receive some sort of payment for working on the board. So it depends on the funding source and what they allow.
Okay.
But our nonprofit is set up to make a profit. So if we do Larry's business model using neighborhood stabilization monies, it'll come back. Once we start getting a profit and it goes back into a pool or a piggy bank, then we can start using that money ourselves too to do other properties for people with seller financing.
There you go.
Okay.
And the way you make money, the way you can earn money in a nonprofit is by taking a salary.
Correct.
I see. Okay.
And a lot of boards are volunteer boards, and our board is not going to be a volunteer board. You have to set that up with your articles of incorporation and your bylaws. And
right.
So we've had a few meetings already, and this all happened while I was back with Larry, that they invited me to sit on the board of their nonprofit, not only as a realtor, but they needed a token veteran and a woman, because women are considered minorities, and women have a lot of other privileges, too. And so they invited me to sit on the board, and so Ron and I went to a meeting with them just last week, and then we've had telephone conferences several times the last couple weeks with all the information I'm trying to research. But Larry's model can fit right into that.
Well, good.
So, and some of the other things, just one other thing I wanted to share with you is about the monies coming back. The thing is, if you're a volunteer organization, it's all talked – you're talked about in the word called capacity, but in English terms or our language, it means credibility. So if you're just starting out a nonprofit, you don't have any capacity at all or any credibility. You have to build credibility. And so if you're a brand new nonprofit, when I was starting to research this for our group, there's already two veterans organizations that are waiting just to apply for a grant, just to get monies to build one home. And so they were wanting to partner like with Habitat for Humanity or the Northern California Homeless Consortium that have already been in the grant business for several years because they have credibility. And then after you establish credibility, maybe for a few years, then you could venture off on your own. Well, we don't have time for all that. I don't want to have time for all that, and I'm at the age where I don't have time for all that, and we need to be making money now. There's a need out there, and so we want to bypass all that. So we're not into those kinds of grants and funding, but I just wanted to let you know that it is out there. So
it just sounds
very
exciting. Yeah, please keep us posted on that.
Okay, I will.
That's great. Good. All right, cool. Anybody else have a question? Sounds like a lot of people been dropping off, but you guys have had some really good questions tonight. That's good. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry, what are your training dates in December for your class?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know. You could ask one of the guys in the office. They could tell you.
All right. Yeah, I'll give them a call.
I'm not sure. You mean in my office?
Yes.
Let me look it up here. I might be able to pull it up on my calendar. Hold on one second.
Hey, Larry.
Yes.
It's 7, 8, and 9.
7, 8, and 9?
Of December, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. The week of December 7th.
Oh, okay.
There you go. You're absolutely right. I just looked it up myself as well. That's true. Cool. All right. Thanks a lot for that info. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, I have a question for you.
Okay. Sure, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sure. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. This is just, I'm a little confused. I thought I was reading the Filthy Rich's CDs, listening to. I thought it was the offer price was 18 to 22. Where is this people coming up with the 30% discount?
Well, that's an example on Filthy Rich's deals. And the higher
they're not
the
talking
price
about
deals.
Filthy Rich's deals. They're talking about something else.
Okay. The higher the price of the property, the more you can pay. And also, you got to realize, too, as the market changes and gets more competitive, you are going to have to offer a little bit more as well. So you just need to run the numbers and make sure the numbers will work. And if you need to, you can always run the deal by me, and I'll be glad to take a look at it for you, okay?
Okay, so it's not like set in the stone. So basically kind of
you're absolutely right. It's not set in stone, and it's not where it has to be X amount, you know, percentage on every listed property.
Okay, my confusion coming from right now, I thought the market was kind of on the little higher side. So that means, but it seems like they are offering less by 30% less.
Well, what they were saying is 30% of list. Like if it's listed for 30, 30% of that is 9,000.
Oh, okay.
Now, I've also paid more than 30%. I've paid more than 100%.
Okay.
But it was a higher priced property.
Gotcha.
And I knew it was in a lot better shape.
Okay. So it's just based on market conditions?
Right, exactly. Okay. And if you have any questions about it, feel free to run the deal by me. I'll be glad to take a look at it.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
thank you
so much.
Anybody else have a question? Well, looks like we covered it all tonight, guys. Hey, I really appreciate all you guys being on here, and I really, really appreciate your business. And if you have any questions in between these calls, please email me, larry@larrygoins.com. Just be sure to put Inner Circle in the subject line. I've been answering, you know, 8 or 10 emails today and even this evening. So be sure and jump on there and ask me any questions you need. I'll be more than happy to help you. And as always, we really appreciate your business. And let us know if you need anything between these calls. And look forward to hearing about your success stories. So thanks a lot, guys. And I will see you in 2 weeks if I don't talk to you before then. So with that, thanks a lot, everybody. And you guys have a great night.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.